It's officially 2026, and my New Year's resolution is to prioritize high-quality pieces in my wardrobe. Thanks to Quince, I can already check that off my list. I'm already planning outfits around my new cotton Oxford shirt. It's such a classic, timeless piece that I know I'll be rewearing all year. Need more than just a wardrobe update? Quince has tons of options for the home as well. Maya has had the same dinnerware since college and has finally decided it's time for a refresh, starting with a gorgeous set of ceramic cake plates. Refresh your wardrobe with Quince. Don't wait. Go to quince.com/rehash for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada, too. That's quince.com/rehash to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/rehash.
What's up?
I'm so hyper right now. I really just want ice cream. Something about the warm air makes me like immediately want a cigarette and also some ice cream at the same time.
Let's go have some ice cream.
After this.
Yeah, I'm so sweaty.
I was like drenched in my bed last night. Sorry that sounded so inappropriate. I just bought into the cult of CeraVe.
Maya was like, I want to get CeraVe. And then she did.
Yeah, crazy story. Inflation happened in Canada. And so every time you go to Shoppers Drug Mart, they kind of have a monopoly on drugstores in Canada. And I used to love them. I used to go all the time. I've always lived right next to one. And now I don't. But I can't spend under like $80 there anymore. It's
so
insane.
Expensive. I've spent like, yeah, that much money and then looked in my bag and been like, what?
I'm like, what are we in Scandinavia or something? What is this?
I know. Well, like, I am really dreading when I run out of my CeraVe cleanser, because that is going to be $30.
I'm dreading when you run out of your CeraVe cleanser, too. Just for you. Yeah, I now have the CeraVe nighttime moisturizer, the daytime moisturizer, which you have both now.
Oh, you got the
daytime? I got the daytime. I got the light wear one, though, because I'm realizing my skin has changed from dry to oily, and I don't like that.
Mm.
So I got the light version, and I also have the orange, like the vitamin C serum. When did CeraVe happen? When did that become a thing that everyone bought all at the same time?
I remember hearing about it on TikTok, like early when I like first joined TikTok, and people were mad because it kept selling out.
Whoa.
And it's true, like you don't always know if they're gonna have the product you're looking for when you go there, like to the drugstore. Mm-hmm. It sells out very easily. It's so ridiculous, but my skin has improved a lot.
I've noticed a visible change in my skin, and yeah. I'm excited to get their cleanser when my cleanser is done. I'm just gonna go full throttle.
Go for it. Yeah, it's just like, it's simple, it's easy.
I don't like buying into beauty trends, but
This is, like, I am not, like, a skincare person at all. I just, like, I have, like, my very simple routine, and it's just, like, a nice cleanser that's my face reacts.
Dermatology
well to.
Tested.
Yeah. This yeah. sounds like an ad.
Yeah.
I have a question. What would be the most shameless advertiser if we ever took up ads? Like, where it would be, like, wow, I can't believe they just scooped to that level.
Cryptocurrency.
Yeah.
I think that is one of the more depraved things you can, promote.
NFTs,
yeah, like that kind of shit.
Yeah,
would be pretty gross to me. I know, like BetterHelp has a lot of
but
I see so many people on YouTube still promoting them, and I'm like, didn't we have this reckoning a few years ago? I don't know if maybe they've changed their emotions, but I don't think they have.
Yeah, or maybe they just have like a very high profile in like, because that's what their advertising has always been, through like podcasts and shit.
Maybe they pay well.
Yeah, I wonder.
I don't know.
Yeah. This is Rehash, a podcast about the social media phenomenons that strike a nerve in our culture, only to be quickly forgotten, but we think are due for a revisiting. This season is about internet archetypes and the many, many lives they've lived. And this is a Patreon bonus episode. Hurrah, hurrah.
was laughing during your role because I looked at myself in the mirror and I just realized my hair kind of looks like a wig.
Oh, I thought I was like saying something stupid or like saying in a weird way.
I just like washed my hair this morning and my bangs are really like overgrown and it just kind of looks like a big wig.
No, I love your bangs right now.
They're so poofy.
No, they're thick.
Whoa.
So like they're the perfect bang consistency thick. in my books.
True.
Okay. We're just going to jump right into it. Today, we're talking about e-girls. And it kind of works as like almost a nice companion to last month's bonus episode, which was simps. We did touch on like the e-girl simp relationship as well as like gamer culture and its treatment of women. And we will be going a bit more into that in this episode as well.
Great.
Yes. But first, we're just going to start off with, what is an e-girl?
That's tough for me because I think of it kind of as an aesthetic thing more than anything. My understanding of them is that the e-girl is a woman who has a large internet following, which also informs the way she like dresses and, you know, presents herself on the internet. I've always understood them as adhering to like Japanese fashion styles and also slightly infantile forms of dress, but I don't think that's like that specific to them. I kind of just immediately go to like the like very sharp winged eyeliner and like blush noses and like a lots of use of highlighter and that kind of thing, and like overlining the Cupid's bow. Pigtails is what I think of when I think of an e-girl, but I don't know really how to define them personally.
As again, like this is just a trend in the series, there's sort of a specific origin of the e-girls, and then there is e-girl the aesthetic. So e-girls are an online subculture turned TikTok teen aesthetic. Around 2019, the term, along with her counterpart, the e-boy, became sort of a catch-all for millennials to refer to Gen Zs like on TikTok. E-girls existed in places like Twitch, Instagram, and 4chan before TikTok, but the prevalence of e-girls on TikTok around when the app blew up, like, sort of solidified the bond between the two. They've been compared to the scene queens of, like, MySpace and even, like, Tumblr girls from our generation. And you can kind of see the ways that, like, these past aesthetics have inspired how the e-girls dress and even, like, the aesthetics of their posts. So what does an e-girl look like? You kind of touched on it. So blush on the end of the nose, the highlighter, yes, winged eyeliner, but then also a lot of the time it's eyeliner kind of done to make your eyes look bigger.
Anime style eyes.
Exactly. And like sometimes they'll draw dots under their eyes, like in the middle. I saw people mention like drawing like hearts and shapes on their faces.
Marina and the Diamonds kind of vibes.
Yeah, for me I was like, oh, that sounds like what I did when I went to Marina and the Diamonds concerts a decade ago.
I think she's very much influenced a lot of their aesthetics.
Which makes me feel old and confused.
I'm always old and confused.
Because when people describe, the way that they dress, they're like tennis skirts and like knee highs and all of this stuff. And I'm like, I dress like that in 2013.
Yeah, the 2014 aesthetics and 13 aesthetics really had a very quick turnaround and are now being described as like vintage, which is just insane to me.
Yeah, and my hair is graying.
It's also, that is way too short of a trend cycle.
With the hair, as along with the pigtails, there'll be a lot of multicolored dye in the hair. Like you might have half your hair colored one, half the other, or like
the two white stripes at the front of your hair.
Yeah, the two strands, like when Billie Eilish did that.
I kind of had that last summer, but it was kind of rusty looking because I kept going in the salt water.
And you weren't giving e-girl.
No, I wasn't giving e-girl.
Sorry, they are picking up garbage on our street at this current moment in time. So if
that's what you hear, that's what you're hearing.
I apologize. So anime in general is a big visual inspiration for the e-girl and e-boy. Also, like, uwu. I've also seen people note that they're, like, inspired by BDSM and kink aesthetics. So, like, those chokers with the big rings on them, like, collars. The hyper-sexualized, like, DDLG kind of
You want to tell the listeners what that is?
Dom daddy little girl
yeah.
kind of vibes, like even videos of e-boys kind of acting like, I don't know.
Like, e-boys acting like dom daddy?
No, but like, have you ever seen those videos where it's like POV, like,
I'm a kidnapper.
Like, I'm your dark boyfriend. And then, or they'll do some kind of weird, creepy face thing and they're like, ah.
Yeah, yeah, I remember.
You know what I mean? Maybe that's not DDLG, but...
Definitely not.
No, but like I think it's you like can Wattpad. Kind of see the like almost like cyber Lolita kind of totally. Aesthetic in the e-girl fashion.
Totally.
Some of it. Rebecca Jennings in a piece for Vox put it succinctly when she wrote, in short, e-girls and e-boys are what would happen if you shot a teenager through the internet and they came out the other side. Like they're sort of a collection of different types of aesthetics and trends. At least like the TikTok teens that are being referred to as yeah. e-kids in these think pieces.
I think what defines them also is that they're kind of like alt. They're alt teenagers as opposed to like the VSCO girl.
Yes. And so in 2019, when all these people were writing about them, it was sort of in this way of like, wow, look at the teenagers doing something different. Like, I, a millennial writer, just downloaded TikTok and I'm seeing all these kids who are breaking the kind of like hyper curated Instagram influencer aesthetic and are really doing their own thing.
Mm.
But then at the same time, there's something very curated about
totally
the e-girl aesthetic. There was even that meme that's like the e-girl factory where you kind of transform yourself into an e-girl and you wear all the like...
Well, yeah, it really plays into what we were talking about kind of with the gatekeeping episode where it's like, yeah, you kind of just buy... your style and what is the community, what are its tenets, you know what I mean? And it doesn't really have any because it's like an internet aesthetic.
Yeah, and then, you know, these are also like the kids who have at this point spent the most of their lives like online. And so when you see all these different like visual inspirations from all different parts of the internet and like different things that they've been able to be exposed to over their lifetime because they grew up with the internet, you can see how like their styles can be sort of a general amalgamation of alt things. Would you say there's something postmodern about this?
You're asking me?
Expand.
Yeah, it's kind of like plucking out different aspects like of nostalgia and different signifiers of identity and putting it all together into one kind of collage and calling it something. And it's all very abstracted from anything, really. Like, even me trying to define what an e-girl is, there isn't really a definition because it's just kind of a look, I guess.
Well, yeah, especially in speaking about like the TikTok aesthetic, right? Like, that was just the look that teens had in 2019, 2020.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not unlike how we were so inspired by, like, 90s stuff when we were teenagers. It's just
yeah, we were not the blueprint. But I do think that they are borrowing from this era that we grew up in with, like, the American Apparel phenomenon and the indie sleaze phenomenon and the soft grunge phenomenon especially mm-hmm. and building off of that in a really short time frame from when it actually happened. And there's something strange about that because it didn't even go through its 20-year cycle to come back into fashion. It really started coming back up again like less than 10 years later. Like, I wonder what you can even call a trend that is borrowing from a trend that happened 4 years before that.
The idea of being a kid and whatever the teenagers were doing at the time when you were slightly younger seems cool and aspirational. I think that's why a lot of people our age, like even when we were in high school, like some people were into like early 2000s stuff because like the idea of a crop top for me was very cool because when I was a kid,
belly top, we used to call them.
Teenagers had belly button shirts, which is what I called them.
Or like
them.
The jelly shoes.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think it makes sense. Yeah, it does feel like a slightly shorter turnaround, like the lo-fi aesthetics of like the e-kids. I feel like, I guess maybe that just never went away and that's more of it.
It's hard to tell. The 2010s are a really big smorgasbord of like
trend
cycles and styles.
Definitely. So the e-girl is referred to as an online subculture in that her existence is almost exclusive to her internet presence. While there were components to scene kids that did exist online, like for example, their joining force was the music that they were interested in. So there was always like this in real life element, like they would congregate at concerts. You'd also see there were some kids dressed like scene kids in real life. They had those haircuts. A lot of the articles I've been reading kind of argue that there is no in real life version of the e-girl. And I guess that is true. I mean, like, you'll see kids dressed like that every once in a while. But, like, yeah, it doesn't really exist in the real world.
Well, yeah, what I'm saying about no community, really. There is no community. Like, not at least a community that can congregate anywhere around something. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? What are they congregating around?
Like, I think there is community. It's just online.
Maybe 100 gecks is the thing they congregate around.
Were you a part of any kind of online adjacent, like, groups or cultures as a teenager? I know that you were, like, when you were really young, you liked scene stuff, but you weren't a scene star. You were too young.
I was pretty into it, but I was a little too young to be going to their concerts. I went to quite a few kind of, like, indie, lo-fi type concerts at the beginning of high school. Like, I would go to a lot of those kind of things. But online communities, no, I think the closest I came to was, like, kind of the soft grunge. But again, that's another thing that's, like, a community that, what really is that actually congregating around? Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I loved Sky Ferreira and all those types of people. But no, I don't think I could say I've ever been a part of any distinct online community. Unless you count Stardoll.com as one of them.
I was very soft grunge in high school, but I didn't have friends through that. Like, I had my friends in real life, and we were just followed each other on Tumblr. I think there were probably Tumblr famous people that, like, had friendships of networks.
At that age, when I dressed like that, I was going to more music concerts than I've ever gone to in my life, and mm-hmm. they were usually around what my friends and I had a shared interest in and what we dressed aspirationally towards. Yeah, again, online, no.
In grade 9, when I had no friends, I, like, got really into... This is such an embarrassing secret. It's not even a secret. But I got really into the band Fun. I just really liked that one song. And I think I just, for some reason, like, reblogged some things on Tumblr and then got into their Tumblr community and had, like, a fan Tumblr for a band that I stopped listening to, like, a couple months later.
That is really funny.
But I just, like, was like, it was something to do.
I mean, I was famously very into One Direction. I guess that kind of counts because I discovered them on YouTube.
Yeah, like, but also, like, you knew other girls who were into, like, it was very normal.
It was a community, yeah.
One Direction. This was so random.
I almost got hypothermia waiting in line at the Much Music building for 8 hours in February outside to see them.
But these weren't cultures, obviously. They were just us.
Fandoms.
Being, yeah.
Which, I guess, not to say that fandoms don't have their own cultures. Like, there are cultures around them, but it's not, like, a movement, I would say.
I don't think every fandom is a culture, but there are cultures that arise from fandoms, like Insane Clown Posse.
Totally.
The Grateful Dead and Fish.
Yeah, what if I revealed to you all that I was a juggalo back in, like, back in the day as a middle schooler?
You'd be cool.
I also think I'm a bit older than that, so.
So in Rebecca Jennings' Vox piece, she cites Dick Hebdige's Subculture, The Meaning of Style, which reported on the subcultures of London in the 60s and the 70s. Hebdige's work, through a Marxist lens, draws a line between the fashion of groups like the punks or the mods and their class politics. Alternatively, Jennings suggests that that is virtually impossible to do today during the age of internet subcultures, which we've talked about. She writes, it was a lot easier to draw connections between a group's clothing, the music they listened to, and their socioeconomic status when that group did not exist exclusively in the digital ether, casting doubt on whether it actually exists at all.
Yeah, I feel like I've written about this before, this idea.
Yeah. Jennings argues that the e-girl is less of a steadfast identity and more like a costume to be experimented with, which, yeah, goes back to what we were talking about, like, being a teenager and sort of trying on different things of different stuff that you liked.
Yeah, ornamenting yourself to kind of figure out what your identity is.
Yeah, and I think it is funny then for all these writers who are probably 10 or so years older than these kids to be reporting on it as if it's, like, this style movement. Like, kids are really breaking out when there have always been alt kids.
And go to any art school.
Versions of alt fashion have always been cool in some realms.
Well, maybe they thought that those alternative communities don't exist anymore, so they're shocked to see it kind of persisting with young people. I think when you just get older, you have no proximity to young people, because why would you? So you're just shocked when you see them. When I see teenagers in our neighborhood, I'm like, what the hell are you doing here? And then I'm like, oh, it's kind of freaky when you're in your 20s and you see teenagers, because it's kind of uncanny valley. You're like, that was me so recently, but not, and it makes me uncomfortable. I'm scared of you.
Yeah, and I do think we are, like, because teenagers have acted as pacemakers, and, like, youth culture has often, like, influenced popular culture in such big ways that every time the kids do something, we're like, this is the thing now. And we sometimes maybe give, like, greater importance.
I mean, the teenagers in Toronto, by and large, wear flannel pajamas to school. So I'm not really looking to them to tell me what to wear, but...
Yeah,
slay.
We're like slightly, I think it's just our obsession with youth.
We just want to drink from the pool of youth at all times.
But yeah, we touched on this a bit during our Gatekeepers episode. I found it interesting that people were even referring to e-girls as a subculture. The TikTok version of the e-girl feels, yeah, like we said, mostly an aesthetic. Do you think subcultures can really exist exclusively online? And if so, like, what would separate that from, like, an aesthetic?
I think congregating in forums, like chat forums, makes something a subculture. Like, interaction, right?
Yeah.
And interaction around a thing, right? Because a lot of the subcultures we talk about before mainly congregate around, like, music, for example. So I think congregating about something, but then, yeah, what separates that from a fandom? If you're not congregating around something and it's just something you're wearing and something that you're putting on and putting a label to, I would call that an aesthetic. Right. And I think that we've just called everything an aesthetic at this point, when something is indeed just personal taste. Like, you don't have to adhere to any aesthetic. You can just have personal taste in things.
That's personal taste core, my...
Oh, personal taste core. You're so right. I forgot it.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I also think that if there is a case to be made for the e-girls as a subculture, we have to look back beyond their presence on TikTok to their genesis within chat room and, like, community spaces online.
Gaming?
We have to talk about online gamers. I would argue that online gaming and other nerd communities online could be considered internet subcultures. Like,
yeah,
you
definitely.
Were saying. And the e-girl was originally sort of offshoot from that. The term e-girl started out as an insult hurled at girls in online gaming spaces by men who didn't want them there.
Mm.
So if, for example, a woman was engaged in an online multiplayer game and men heard a female voice coming from her, they might message e-girl into the chat. The assumption was that these women were either pretending to be interested in traditionally nerdy things for the attention of the real male nerds, or in order to sort of scam them by using their looks to gain followings from these men.
Oh my god, it's also just a really lame insult.
I know.
It doesn't evoke anything. It's not giving the consonant vowel consonant.
This is a 2014 entry on Urban Dictionary for e-girls. An e-girl is an internet slut, a girl who tends to flirt with many online guys. Her world revolves around getting attention from professional gamers as well as guys who are extremely e-thirsty. She may possibly send nudes or do anything else for these guys in order to seek their attention, including possibly spreading Nutella all over her body. Calling a girl an e-girl is an insult. You might as well be calling her a hoe who's sub-thirsty.
So specific, Nutella all over her body.
I know, I think it might be a reference to something that I didn't really, I don't know.
This was written by a 14-year-old.
Yeah.
Just based on the sentence structure alone.
E-thirsty.
E-thirsty. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's embarrassing. I don't know. It just, again, going back to just the general resentment of women existing anywhere.
I think the beauty about Urban Dictionary is that you can really look back and see how people who were using these words meant to use them.
Totally.
Like, it's coming from the horse's mouth.
Yeah. Well, even simp has evolved. On Urban Dictionary, the top one really distinguishes between respecting women and overvaluing ones who don't like you. And it's like interesting because the lower down, it's just like dumb losers, you know?
Yeah, it's a very interesting like survey.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, this kind of gives us an idea of what people who were using this originally in 2014 thought of e-girls.
Internet sluts.
Remember living above gamers?
Yeah. I do. We used to live above these gamers who the walls were paper thin and they would yell every single slur in the book known to man until as late as 6 a.m.
And like that kind of gives you an idea of the pent up rage of like just saying awful shit.
Oh yeah, they would scream at the top of their lungs and like smash things. It was insane.
Yeah.
They played Call of Duty.
And we moved. I don't want to dive too deeply into the misogyny of online gaming. We talked about it in the Sims episode, and we might be talking about Gamergate in the future. Huh? But as we can surmise from just the above information, this was not a hospitable environment for perceived outsiders. If women had cleavage showing during their streams, there might be like men pointing that out in the comments, like, for example, like boob police.
Wait, what?
Yeah, you might be streaming, you have cleavage, and men are commenting boobs or like commenting about the fact that your cleavage is out, because obviously you're doing it to attract viewers.
Obviously.
This kind of thinking also extended beyond exclusively gaming-centered communities. Girls on 4chan, female cosplayers, etc., could also be e-girls. I think we often think about places like Twitch, Discord, Reddit, and 4chan and imagine that they're occupied by horny, nerdy men, which they are, but these are also the places where e-girls with overlapping interests into these men can be found. One of the saddest parts about it is that there are passionate female gamers and like passionate female fans of, I don't know, like nerd shit.
It's like a bajillion dollar industry. Obviously, like half the population will have some people who are interested in it. It's not that crazy.
Yeah.
Of a concept.
And so while these e-girls were often met with hostility from men in the gaming world, some of them also did like develop significant followings from those men. Why do you think that is? We sort of talked about it in Sims.
Well, it's just that that very thin line between resentment and like sexual fascination, you know, that men have. They're like angry that they're sexually attracted to you, but they're also like, oh, I can't help it. And that is kind of your only role on the internet as a woman ever, is to be sexual and to be gazed upon by anonymous men. So
yeah,
naturally they would gain followings. And also, even going back to pick-me's, men tend to love women who are interested in the things they're interested in, but not too much. But they do kind of like that because it's like a woman who can kind of speak their language, you know what I mean? I was watching this like house tour. I've just been watching a lot of apartment tour videos. They've just been like rolling on my YouTube. And there was this one of the Sports Illustrated model, and her entire place was decked out in like Marvel paraphernalia. And the guys interviewing her were like, oh my God, I can't believe it. It's like a rare, you know, jewel to find a woman who, oh my God, crazy enough, likes gaming. And so I think there's that element to it as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It sums back to this idea of like thinking that there are boy things and girl things. And it's like men just can't get their brain around the idea that women would like boy things,
yeah,
quote unquote. A well-known example of a girl who, you know, gained a large following from nerd communities is Belle Delphine.
Oh my God.
You are the one that told me about Belle Delphine. And we're going to be going into like her history and everything. If for people who don't know who Belle Delphine is, she's a model / YouTuber / cosplayer. And she basically fits the stereotype of the e-girl imagined by these gamers. Really, like, even in their, like, negative bias towards e-girls, in that I don't think that Belle Delphine is an avid gamer, but she cosplays as characters from video games, and she'll, like, wear her headset, and is sort of, I think, what men picture when they're like, oh, these e-girls are only pretending to be interested in these things. I'm not saying she's not interested in them, but I don't think that that's what she's known for. Or like is a prolific online gamer.
Well, going back to the looking and being looked at, you know, you're not probably watching a male streamer and you're not watching his stream to watch him, you're watching it to watch him play video games. Whereas a woman is there to be looked at. So you're watching her stream to look at her.
Yeah.
Not her play video games.
Yeah.
So, of course, she's going to be wearing, like, costumes and kind of playing up the environment that she's existing in rather than, you know, the game itself, because that's what men are going to her page for.
Yeah, exactly. And Belle Delphine's look is, like, also very much like the e-girl look we described earlier. She wears, like, these pink wigs and does the eyeliner, like, the big eye makeup. The kind of, yeah, cyber Lolita gothy thing.
She's very young looking too, is another very big aspect of it. She looks like a young teenager.
Well, when she blew up, she was 18.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
So that's also why she looked young.
And she also looks younger. It's like even crazier because she looks younger than 18. She's very young looking.
Yes. And she blew up like posting nerdy thirst traps and stuff on Instagram. And she's also known for doing the Ahegao facial expressions, which it's a face that anime characters make when they orgasm.
I cannot overstate how deeply uncomfortable it makes me when people make this face in their photos. It freaks me out. I don't know what it is.
I mean, because it's sort of, I don't know, it's like... whatever floats your boat, right?
It's not like I'm not blaming them. It's just the face itself is so, like, it makes my blood curdle.
Like, just a visceral response?
Yeah, I'm just like, oh, God. I don't know what it is. It's, like, basically, like, cross-eyed and then, like, tongue sticking out and, like, open mouth.
Yeah.
It's very, like, just unnatural looking.
Yeah. I mean, that's, like, the point.
That's kind of the point, yeah.
Yeah. But also, like, amongst, like, all these, like, more traditional, like, kind of thirst traps, she would pose shit like with a dead octopus, like her smiling with a dead octopus, or a video of her eating raw eggs, like really seriously.
She makes me laugh.
Yeah, she's sort of a troll.
Yeah, I kind of like her. I just respect the trolliness of it all.
Yeah. In 2018, she started a Patreon where she posted adult photo shoots and stuff like that. And then in 2019, when she was 19, Delphine posted a photo to Instagram and wrote that if the photo got a million likes, she would create a Pornhub account. The photo got nearly 2 million likes. And let me just say that in researching this, I made the stupid mistake of Googling Belle Delphine Pornhub.
On her regular window.
I was looking...
in a cafe.
I was looking for articles about it, and then I forgot that, like, the first results that come up are gonna be Pornhub.
I was like, again, some novice internet user behavior, Hannah.
Yeah, so then I had to clear my search history.
So funny. At least go incognito.
So she made the Pornhub account and she posted 12 videos. But her followers were enraged to find videos with titles like Belle Delphine Plays With Her Pussy or PewDiePie Goes All The Way Inside Belle Delphine, which showed her petting stuffed cats and eating a photo of YouTuber PewDiePie, respectively.
I saw some of them because my ex and I were laughing about it, and it was so entertaining.
Yeah, it's really,
it was like clever.
It's clever. It's creative. People weren't happy about this, as you can imagine. And then a month later, Delphine would go viral for selling containers of her gamer girl bathwater for $30 a container, which I think it sold out twice.
Hustler shit.
Yeah, it's really funny.
Truly, I'm like, if there's a demand, you supply it.
Well, basically, it was like men were like, oh my god, I would drink your bath water. And she was like, okay. But following this were false claims from individuals saying that they were drinking, cooking with, and vaping the bath water. Pretty great. There were also these fake rumors that it gave people chlamydia.
What? Yeah, okay.
But... I think, or like herpes or something, yeah.
I think we need to have a more robust understanding of sex education in the world out here.
Because of these moves, Delphine has been labeled a master troll who subverts notions of sexiness, as well as an opportunist. Madeline Agler of The Cut wrote this of her. Delphine herself has become something of an online Rorschach test, a figure in which whom people see either a brilliant performance artist making a scathing commentary on the expectations of women online, or someone cravenly taking advantage of misogynistic tropes of women gamers and appropriating Japanese cosplay culture.
It's funny, this is the second time we've heard like a female writer describe an e-girl as craven.
Oh, yeah.
Very fascinating.
And I guess my question is, like, where do you stand on the Rorschach test?
I guess somewhere at the intersection between both. I think they're both kind of a bit ridiculous. I like her because I think she's very clever, and I think it's kind of brave to troll angry, horny men on the internet. I like how cheeky she is about it. I think it's funny. In terms of appropriating Japanese culture, I mean, I'm not going to pin that just on her. There's an entire aesthetic that does that. Like, that's a huge phenomenon in the US of weeaboos running about, yeah, you know, being overly obsessed with Japan and in a really weird way. Like, having a parasocial relationship with a country, basically.
But what would you say about the suggestion of taking advantage of misogynistic tropes of women gamers? Like, the idea that, you know, e-girls do have this sort of, like, men are watching them because they're attracted to them, but also out of hate thing. And someone like Belle Delphine, who we don't know is an actual gamer, has sort of, like, swooped in and, like...
Are women just supposed to sit there and take it? Or can they not at least see the loophole or, like, see the window and make some money off of it? Or are they just supposed to be like, no, I promise I'm a real gamer, and try to gain the validation of misogynistic men in the gaming community? Or can they just, like, use that and know that men are going to be willing to pay to see them get fucked, basically? So why not make money off of it? I don't see anything wrong with it. I think that's kind of a ridiculous assertion. Why don't you blame the misogynistic men instead of women who, like, see the opportunity and take it?
Yeah, I think that's, like, a totally fair point. I think that, like, this was something I was thinking about while writing it. One part of me was like, I can understand why this might be frustrating if you're a gamer girl trying to just be a gamer girl. But then at the same time, it's not Belle Delphine's responsibility or, like, fault for any of that.
I also think there's a lot of internalized misogyny within the female gaming community anyways. Like, I think that there is a lot of hate hurled at other women within that community. I think that is a lot of the time when people do refer to the pick me, they, like, the gamer girl does come to mind.
Okay.
So I think some of that anger is also maybe stemming from that as well.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
I mean, the Japanese culture thing, yeah, but I don't think Belle Delphine is the one exemplar of that. I think there's, like, a gajillion people in the US who do that in so many different subcultures, and why is Belle Delphine taking the hit from it, you know?
Just because she had a large following, I guess.
Like, there's, like, cosplayers do that in general, so why aren't we... Like, we're in really in a culture of trying to reclaim the cosplayer, so why is Belle Delphine, because she's, like, an overly sexual woman on the internet, you know, having to get the brunt of that criticism?
Yeah, totally.
Maybe just no one should do it, but, you know, here we are.
Around the same time that Belle Delphine was trolling her followers, the term e-girl was also blowing up for a much darker reason, and this was actually where I first heard the term. In 2019, 17-year-old Bianca Devins was murdered by 22-year-old Brandon Clark. There are contradicting reports on the nature of Devins and Clark's relationship. Some places say that they met online, but one of her sisters has also said that he was a family friend she knew in real life. Some places say that they had been dating for a couple months. Others say that they were friends, but Clark wanted to date and Devins didn't, and then he was using drugs as a way to, like, win her affection.
What do you mean? Like, he was...
Like, they had hung out a couple times in person, and he was...
Trying to seem cool?
No, trying to get her to come hang out by being like, I have drugs.
Oh, like luring.
Yeah. So the two communicated on Instagram and in Discord servers, and some places suggest that that's where they originally met. Both of them spent a lot of time online. Devins was an active user of 4chan and was described in the coverage of her murder as an e-girl. I don't believe she had, like, a particularly large following, especially not compared to someone like Belle Delphine, but her friends had said that Bianca had experience with harassment from men on various platforms. So Devins' murder took place after a concert that she and Clark attended together, where she apparently, like, kissed another boy, and that enraged Clark. The following morning, Clark posted a photo of Bianca's body onto her Discord group chat with the caption, "Sorry fuckers, you're going to have to find someone else to orbit." Do you know what orbiting is?
In my brain, it just means revolving around someone.
It's similar to what we've talked about in the Simps episode when you were describing, like, the simp in some ways is like the friend-zoned guy, the guys who were
floating the periphery.
Yeah, guys who were essentially like befriending women in the hopes that they might get to sleep with them. But when it comes to online relationships like the one between Clark and Devons, it also means like engaging with and following this person's content. The idea of the e-girl amassing orbiters, men who will humor their interests in nerd culture in the hopes of getting with them, speaks to the conditional terms in which men will allow women to be part of these communities, like we've said. It sounds like Bianca and her female peers had a lot of experience with men trying to orbit them. This is a quote from an article about Bianca's murder from the Huffington Post by writer Melissa Jeltson. The writer had spoken to a friend of Bianca's sort of about the relationship between her and Bianca, and she says they bonded over their experience with older abusive men on 4chan. They had both started using the site at a young age when they were lonely and looking for friends. What happened next was textbook, Claire said. They attracted men who wanted young, innocent girls to obsess over. As soon as the girls did anything to break that image, like find a boyfriend or have sex, the spell was broken and the men would retaliate using anything they had to hurt them, including posting intimate photos of them or their chat logs without permission. Which sounds familiar.
Well, it just kind of reminds me of those cases of Rebecca Schaefer from the 90s. She was this actress who this man developed like a really unhealthy fascination with and ended up going to her door and murdering her on her doorstep. And it triggered a lot of the anti-stalking laws in the US. And then like with Bjork, this man becoming obsessed with her and sending her a video of him like killing himself basically and then sending like a bomb to her house. I'm pretty sure it was a bomb. This, even going back to the Sims episode, the sense of entitlement and ownership over women to the extent that it's like idea of like, if I can't have you, no one can. You know what I mean?
That's literally basically what he was saying when he said you'll have to find someone else to orbit, right? Yeah. She expressed interest in somebody else and he reacted in the most despicable, like,
there aren't even words for it. But even with Nicole, right, it's that concept of what we giveth, we can taketh away. And the precarity of that, men being like, well, I'll give you affection, but just so you know, you are only an object. And if you were to branch out of that, or if you were to show any other men intimacy or affection, I'll take away.
But the crazy thing is that Bianca Devons wasn't famous.
Yeah.
She didn't have a following. She wasn't some propped up e-girl. I think that she was in these online communities where even like if it's not that many people involved, like men, again, just by like having girls there, feel like entitlement
of course
to them in this way. It's
again, like I said, it's any woman in the online realm. It's not just super famous ones.
Yeah.
This case really rattled me. It's incredibly terrifying.
And one of the most disturbing parts about it is that up until he was captured by police, Clark was posting photos of Bianca's corpse. And even after he was arrested and those original photos were taken down from, like, Instagram, other users began to post them on various platforms with the hashtag RIP Bianca.
I also remember people on 4chan praising him.
Yeah.
For what he did.
Her Discord server got taken over by trolls, so her actual, like, mourning friends had to go, like, start a new chat.
Pretty awesome to know that there are people capable of hating women so much. Obviously, it's like, we know this, but this case really just put it into perspective.
And I think also just the idea that this person who was a multifaceted human being in the minds of these men, like, represents what they think is a systemic problem of, like, women using men, male attention to gain things and then not following through, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
That they can almost look at her as like a worthy sacrifice to mm-hmm. their cause when she was just, she was a human being. She was like a teenage girl.
Yeah.
And it kind of just shows how like deep-rooted it is that people who didn't know Bianca and maybe didn't even know her online were like celebrating her death because it like represented some kind of victory for these supposed
communities.
Yeah. So some have stressed the importance of not walking away from the story with the idea that the story is about the dangers of online relationships and community because Brandon may have known Bianca in real life, but their interaction still took place, I think, predominantly online. Like, what do you think about this?
Listen, I think being someone who has, I guess, is a part of an online community, I am very well aware that I need an in-person support network and community because ultimately, I don't think that people trying to assuage the idea that online communities can be dangerous, I don't think that that's, I think that's a bit naive. Like, I think that it is almost impossible to have proper empathy for someone if you know them mostly through the internet and what, and mostly as this like idealized version of themselves. You know, I think communities are great, like online for people who might not have a lot of friends and are seeking help, but ultimately support can only go so far online. You need in-person support. I think a lot of people become increasingly alienated. This is how a lot of people become radicalized on the internet, is from this very concept. I think that obviously there's nuance there and there are merits to having online communities and online support systems. But at the end of the day, like, I don't think that that should supplant in-person communities and support systems. I think that it's a helpful aid, but I don't think that we should just automatically assume that it's this inherently wholesome and positive thing. I think that we should be very wary of it still. And yeah. I think this case, regardless of whether they knew each other in person, does go to show that one, this guy was probably radicalized in an online forum, and two, didn't view her as a human being.
Yeah.
And probably because he knew her mostly as an online person, regardless of the fact that he knew her in real life, he visualized her as her online form.
Yeah. I will say, like, one thing, Clark came from a background of he witnessed extreme violence in his home, where it's like, I'm sure that he was radicalized in his ideas as well, but also it's like important to note the fact that like there are also learned habits.
Well, also people, abused people tend to gravitate towards online forums and then congregate with each other, right? Wounded people.
Yeah.
Like I think that,
and that's
again, that's where a lot of this ideology can take place, yeah, regardless of the fact that, you know, some people might have in-person histories.
And that's not me, like, being like, well, he, you know, no, giving but him of course, excuses. It's just, think it's, like, in fairness, it's, like, important to consider, like, everything. So it's not just, like, the internet is dangerous.
That blink. Kind of violence doesn't exist in a vacuum, obviously, that violent behavior. But I just think that for someone to be like, don't talk about online communities, don't drag them into this, is just absolutely ridiculous to me.
Yeah. No, I agree. And I mean, I think the people who were saying that were people from these communities. Like, you had boys that she knew on 4chan being like, it's really sad about Bianca and it's really messed up, but also like girls need to be more clever. Yeah. And I mean, also like the specificities of these relationships is the kinds of places where these people are like meeting each other and talking are specifically toxic because it's, there's already a hostility towards women too.
Yeah, I'm impressed she used 4chan.
I think there are a lot of teen girls that use 4chan.
That's wild. Yeah,
that like grew up on these platforms, on Twitch and stuff like that. And so kind of going back to present day, like when the TikTok e-girl aesthetic blew up, there was a lot of talk about reclaiming the word and like celebrating young women who poked fun at the negative responses from men and like the men who were like mad about them and, you know, doing whatever they wanted. And like articles would really emphasize how clever and in control the e-girls were and how they played into the idea of online personas. And like, I do think that that is true. And then every single one of these articles would mention the fact that these girls have also experienced harassment. They get hate, even sometimes mentioning Bianca's murder. I feel uncomfortable with these articles like written by grown adults talking about like the e-girl and kind of talking about these mostly teenage girls as like totally in control and like playing around with expectations of them online and pissing off men and then sort of slightly mentioning their harassment.
Well, it's like treating them all like they're Belle Delphine when they're not all Belle Delphine.
Yeah.
There are like shades and colors to how e-girls exist, because again, it's not really an actual thing. It's just like an aesthetic.
Yeah, and I just think also in our journey to like take teenage girls more seriously in a way that they deserve to be, we also sometimes overemphasize like their power.
Of course, we've talked about this a lot.
Yeah. This paired with the repeated mentions of the ehegao eyes and the BDSM, like when describing their aesthetics, like it just makes me uncomfortable as an adult.
I wouldn't necessarily say that e-girls are all teenage girls though, right? A lot of like sex workers and cam girls also like utilize this aesthetic and play into it. A lot of gamer girls aren't teenagers. Like I don't necessarily just equate them with being underage necessarily.
I'm more talking about the TikTok aesthetic, right? So, like, yes, you have these cam girls, but, like, from this, there was sort of e-girls sort of started being a way that millennials would talk about Gen Zs and, like,
teenagers. So the very articles that are talking about Gen Z aesthetics are talking about Belle Delphine in the same article, or are they, like, two different types of articles?
Well, they might mention her in briefing, or, like, Bianca in, like, passing, like, the mention Belle Delphine because they were kind of, they were coming out in 2019, like, the same year as all the Belle Delphine stuff. But, like, this is more so the aesthetic of it, where it did feel like they were mostly, like, writing about TikTok teens.
To me, there has to be some sort of distinction between the e-girl aesthetic and then the Belle Delphine kind of trolls. And people kind of taking misogyny and using it in a different way versus like a girl who's making some like cutesy fashion video on TikTok. When maybe these articles are conflating them and that's the problem.
I think so. I think there's a little bit of that. I think it's sort of taking a word that, again, already existed and then applying it to this aesthetic. But these girls themselves were using the word to describe themselves because it is an online curated aesthetic.
Yeah. The girls I see using like the anime face, I mean, by and large, at least I haven't seen a ton of, like, teenage girls using that. Mm-hmm. I've mostly seen it within the kind of, like, OnlyFans sphere of, like, Insta girls. But I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. It's so, again, so amorphous. It's hard to track down, really, like, who is doing what.
No, I know. I mean, like...
But I agree, I think. It's kind of doing that overstatement of empowerment that we do with that kind of, like, the girl boss has brought along, this kind of, like, girl power culture and being, like... She's taken misogyny by the neck and wringing it. And it's like, well, yes, but she's also operating within a misogynistic world. And there is still the larger problem of that.
And I think a lot of the time it's like making what you can out of like a situation that was shitty to begin with. I think some of my discomfort just comes from the idea that we've now started projecting the idea of like the e-girl onto like youth culture and teen culture. Where I'm not criticizing the, like, sexualized nature of the aesthetic, especially amongst adults. And I also think that teenagers have the right to experiment with their aesthetics and sexuality and all of that. Like, every teenager.
Yeah, I think we forget that sometimes when we talk about it, that they have the right to do that, just not within adult spaces, basically.
I get this, like, pearl-clutchy anxiety because of the way that TikTok sort of turns normal kids into celebrities and like exposes content made by young people to like larger audiences than like our Tumblrs or like Instagrams ever would have gotten when we were kids. So the idea that like kids are online being labeled as e-girls, which have this kind of weird history and then also have the potential to be seen by adult men, is scary to me and not something that I think enough of these think pieces have ever really brought up enough.
There's nothing to me inherently wrong with a teenage girl dressing a certain way and dancing a certain way in a TikTok video. I don't, like, I was acting like that at that age. You're experimenting, you're coming into yourself, that's fine. But the virality of TikTok and the public arena that it is, like, it really is this, like, floating arena of just, you know, endless opinions and videos and dances and whatnot, that the fact that anything can kind of pop up there is bizarre. There's no specific space for teenagers. Teenagers probably wouldn't want a specific space for themselves, to be honest, because they want to be treated like adults. And it's like, it is obviously scary that a teenager can blow up on there and be seen by adults and lusted after by grown anonymous men. And it's not a problem. Of course, we weren't exposed to that at all at that age.
I think also, especially, like, since the time that these articles were written in 2019, like, TikTok has become used more commonly by adults than it was, you know, a year into the apps. Like, it used to be, like, that weird Gen Z teenager thing. And, like, sure, I'm sure there were, like, rando adults on there.
It was, by and large, because it was kind of an extension of Musical.ly, almost.
Yeah.
Made for young people.
I don't know if people even are really calling teens e-girls now, like, 4 years after this, right? Like, I'm sure that we're going to find another, like, aesthetic for them.
They also do call themselves about a trillion different aesthetics. Yeah, that is, like, the, they love doing that. So I guess we'll see down the line what new thing they start calling themselves and what we agree to. It is interesting that they're so accepted as sexual beings, like e-girls, that even millennials, like millennial women who probably wouldn't necessarily agree to that, are condoning it.
Yeah.
In their own articles. It's fascinating.
Totally. Can I read you a quote that, like, made me feel weird?
Yeah.
It's a little quote from that same Vox article where she describes the e-girl aesthetic as a hyper-sexualized child aesthetic, which borrows from anime, means that e-girls often look both older and younger than they are.
To be honest, she's not wrong, and, like, a lot of these grown women will be, like, playing with stuffed animals, you know. I think the gamer girl aesthetic generally is kind of infantile, mainly probably because they're, like, playing games for a living, but, like, they'll be, like, hugging their Pokemon squishies. I'm thinking of, like, Bella Porch, even, who I thought was 14, and then in another video was definitely not 14, and I was like, ugh, like, there's something icky about it. She's, like, 30, and she's playing with stuffies, and it's creepy and weird to me, but I don't know how much I can, like, blame her, I guess, for that.
I guess it's more like, this was my gripe with, like, the think PC part of it, that's just, like, dropping shit like that in there, but then also being like, Gen Z is really changing the game, and it's like, Gen Z, who are mostly kids in 2019, or, like,
teens. Yeah.
But again, I'm like, maybe I'm being reactive. I don't know.
No, I think this entire season has been us dunking on think pieces, to be honest, because yeah. And I don't blame the people who write them. I blame the state of what's allowed to get greenlit. But after a while, you're kind of like, okay.
I have read, like, a lot of identical think pieces from the exact same, like, windows of time from basically every publication on every single subject that we've covered on this show.
Yeah,
like, it's kind of comical.
Well, it's like the dissociative feminism thing, right? How many think pieces of that entire discourse just said quite literally the exact same 5 talking points over and over and over again?
Yeah.
Being a woman on the internet, I'm just gonna leave it at that.
Rehash is hosted by Hannah Rain and me, Maia. It's produced and edited by me, and the intro and outro song is produced by our talented friend, Ian Mills. Thanks for listening.